This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This episode is brought to you by our sponsor, ThePerfectTrick.com. And you can access ThePerfectTrick.com by going to the website, ThePerfectTrick.com. How perfect is that? They have been sponsoring us for the past couple of months and are looking to get you as a customer. Please go and check them out. And if you buy over $25 worth of magic, that you get a free trick. And if you put in the promo code WORD upon checkout, that you're going to be getting another 10% discount. So please go over and check them out. And I just want to make sure that they know that they're sponsorship money is being spent properly by you helping, you know, right now, that they're not going to continue to sponsor unless they get some more business. I would think it's the way things work, you know. So if you guys are purchasing anything, please go check them out. Help us both out. Help the Magic Word and help theperfecttrick.com. Just go over and, again, if you're going to be buying something, just give them a try. I know that you may have another favorite online dealer you might use, but I would like for you just to see what it's like once you have a pleasant experience working with Eric Citron and ThePerfectTrick.com. Again, I appreciate it, and they do too. Well, this week we're going to continue with our October, not really a fright fest, but we're going into our Halloween month of October and talking about some things that kind of are related to Halloween type of things. Now, last week we spoke with Paul Voudini and talking about seances in the UK and other Jack the Ripper and seance and some other kinds of cool things, or ghoulish things perhaps. But one of the things that I wanted to talk about this week is cold reading. That is a skill that you learn that psychics would use in order to anticipate, or rather to be able to read the people who are sitters. So if you're unfamiliar with cold reading, that just basically means that you're going to be able to tell something about a person's character and their personality and something about their life that they would not have otherwise told you. In other words, that you're not going to be looking up anything on the social media. You're not going to have any preconceived notions. There's nothing that's been information that they've given you in a pre-show or whatever. But basically, it is somebody that you are sitting down with or seeing for the first time, and you are giving them a character reading. That might be what some would call a psychic reading or something. But basically, you're doing a lot of cold reading. And this week we're going to be talking with Dave Arch, who is a friend of mine up in Omaha, Nebraska, actually a little suburb outside of Omaha called Papillion. And he and I were friends, or became friends. We are still friends. We became friends many years ago when I lived in Omaha back in the mid-80s. And we talk a little bit about that. And there are a variety of things that we cover. And towards the end of the conversation, we start to get into a more cold reading. Now, the reason I wanted to bring this up is that, again, this has applications to not only during the period now during Halloween, and if you're going to be doing some psychic readings or things, but more importantly, that there are things that you can use in your daily life and even within your business. There are, because he is a corporate coach or counselor and has worked with as trainers and worked as a trainer, as well as training trainers and getting them to understand more about their employees. And that's kind of a cool thing, because that the what he's going to be teaching, or what he does teach through the series of e-books that he's just recently published through library.com, that's LYBRARY.com, he is able to teach you some ideas about how to be conscientious, or conscious, I guess, about your surroundings and who's doing what, and be able to better read somebody. And that is a great skill to have in business or in life for about anything. And so that's why I thought this was kind of an interesting kind of a way of looking at cold reading, and not just from a psychic reading, but doing it every day as in business, and also just when you're meeting somebody for the first time, being introduced to someone, or if you're a magician working in a strolling environment where you're talking one-on-one in a restaurant or other kinds of things, how to kind of size up your client or the volunteer, and to be able to treat them properly and with respect. Anyhow, a lot of stuff we talk about. I think you're going to get a lot out of this, regardless of your background, whether that you're interested in that, because we also talk about club meetings and how to increase membership in club meetings. What's that got to do with cold reading? Nothing, but you'll get it. I think you'll like this podcast. I enjoy chatting with him. So please welcome my guest this week, Mr. Dave Arch, here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast.com. I have had a lot of people who have been on, as I've talked about in the past, probably over 90% of the people that I speak with on the podcast here are people who are friends of mine, those I've worked with in one place or another or in different parts of my life where we've come in an association. And we have some, obviously, some common bonds with magic, but there are other things beyond that that where we have worked together and broken bread or had a beer or a cup of coffee or something where we know each other on more than just an acquaintance basis. But there are a few people who that I know very well and have had a long relationship with and a deep friendship. And some of these guys we don't get together nor see often enough. And one is my good friend from Omaha, Nebraska that we haven't seen in a long time, Mr. Dave Arch. Hey there, Dave. How are you?
Well, hello. I'm doing very well. Thank you for asking.
You are. Good. I'm glad that you're – now, let me just kind of, by way of background also, for those who are listening to know a little bit about what you're doing and what we're going to be kind of talking about. I mean, it's not just a couple of friends talking and someone's listening to a party line on telephone or something, that you and I had worked together up in Omaha, Nebraska, actually. We both lived in Papillion, a little suburb outside of – are you still in Papillion, by the way?
Still am.
Yeah, okay.
Still am.
And that Dave was someone who was working with the with schools, doing a lot of school shows and working with principals and booking the shows. And want to get into that a little bit then also and some of his strategy, what he was doing. But he was also doing a lot of corporate coaching and counseling. And he has a background in counseling and I believe a theology degree. I believe that you're an ordained pastor.
That's right. That's right. I was a pastor before I became a magician.
Right, because I was thinking you did some counseling and things, marriage counseling and that kind of thing.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so. Obviously within the pastorate, but then also beyond that. And now I've gone on. Of course, magic's still a flaming passion, but I've gone on. And I now, for the last 15 years, have been an executive coach with the with a company here in Omaha, largest privately held Nebraska company. So, yeah, I've stayed in the same area, but just changed hats.
We have also shared working together for the Gemini Network. I guess it's kind of redundant because the N Stanford Network, I believe. This was something so many years ago that Joe Stevens had put together that was kind of an original online forum where that you could go and post ideas and chat with each other, but also read articles. And many of us would post some articles. And I had the thing for a number of years called Scott's Thoughts that I'd published. But there was another column that Dave Arch had published there that had to do with ideas for corporate coaching and whenever that you're doing motivational speaking and when people come back from lunch, for an example, that here's a trick that you can do to wake them up because they're usually full and sleepy and, you know, not really interested in getting back into the subject. And so, you know, here's a way that you can use a magic trick or some ideas. And they were fabulous. And I've gone back actually then, Dave, and had found that file. I don't know if it's still out there on the archives anywhere on the internet, but I had downloaded that and printed out and put it into a three-ring binder. And it's just some gold. Did you ever put that, by the way, any of those into a booklet or anything?
I did. I did a series of books, Tricks for Trainers, and it was designed for corporate trainers on how to use simple magic. And then I did three videos, and those are now all on library.com. So they're still out there floating around somewhere. But I did that for 10, 12 years and really taught corporate trainers how to use magic in their training.
Right. Right. So you were teaching the trainers. It wasn't necessarily that you were teaching the employees during this. Is that right?
I was teaching trainers how to spice up their own training with simple visual magic.
Right. Yeah. Give a couple of ideas so people have an idea of what you're talking about.
Well, you think about even the very simple flap card, your three-card Monty.
Monty, right.
You know, very, very easy to adapt that. It's not unlike the work I did in trade shows too, where you're doing a visual message. So you've got instead of the Queen of Hearts in the middle of two black cards, you have we're going to talk today about quality. And now keep your eye on the quality card, because you're going to want to, you know, boy, it's easy for quality to escape us if we don't pay attention, if we're not vigilant. So today we're going to talk about some techniques for remaining vigilant in our attention to maintaining quality in what we do. Boom. I've opened, but I haven't opened in a predictable manner. I've done it where the people are now leaning forward going, what's he going to do next?
Yeah.
That's the kind of things that I would do.
Right. Cause you got to try and keep their attention. And I think in corporate training, similar to trade shows, you're trying to get people to edge up on their seats and get closer to you because they want to hear the message. What is it that he's going to talk about then next? And also they're learning something along the way. You know, as I've always said when I talk to people about working trade shows, it's not magic. Actually, magic is a vehicle to deliver the message. The message is the important thing.
It can't be, or you're not going to get good marks.
That's correct.
You will have let the one usurp the other. That's not what they're paying you for. They're not paying you for a magic show.
Correct.
And I think the other thing is when you use magic in a training session, that feeling of amazement that comes over us, even yet today when somebody does something that just, it's like our jaw drops. That's a very teachable moment. And I want my trainees to be in a teachable place, and magic helps get them there.
Now, when you do the trainees, how do you contact trainees to get all of them into an area? I mean, because these guys, I assume, well, come from two different backgrounds. One would be consultant trainers who would go out to other companies, as well as those within, let's say, an HR department who train internally, I assume. Is that correct?
Well, I published all my books. My books were picked up by the Bob Pike Group out of Minneapolis. And so they were my agent, and they basically put me out with their clients because they're a train the trainer company. So they basically put me out. I didn't need to find my own people. They put me out into their own clients, but now with this was a workshop on a seminar on using magic in your training.
Gotcha. Okay. And were you then teaching them to become magicians? As well, I mean, because you have to learn certain techniques, and I know that you're not teaching sleight of hand because most everything that you're talking about are.
Oh no, I was very careful not to reveal in my books stuff that wasn't in the public domain. You know, it's out there.
Yeah, like the flap card, like you're saying, right? For example.
Absolutely, it was just a lot of people can't figure out how to use that as an object lesson for this topic or that topic. And so it was getting them more in that mindset of here are simple things and let's brainstorm on the different ways we could spin the message and use that as a hook. And a lot of the times it was an opener or a comeback from break, re-engagement tool, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Well, moving on from that, we'll get back into the training and the cold reading here shortly. But I kind of want to go back for a minute. I mentioned about the school shows you did, because I remember you had talked to me about that as I was leaving Omaha, about some of the secrets that you were using at the time and that now you've gone a different direction.
Yes.
And so I thought perhaps you might be willing to share some of those secrets with a general.
Oh, absolutely. That was a 12-year run. We did all the elementaries here and junior highs and high schools. In the elementaries, I would do a free assembly program, and then there would be a comeback evening family show. So my assembly program was, you know, I don't know, 40 minutes, and it was around the words "I can." So it was building "I can" in the sense that it was building a child's ability to try, persevere, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
I was like a motivational speaker for kids.
Wow.
And oh, I sang.
Like Mr. Rogers.
Oh, we had music. It was like, oh my. They let me loose. And we would do an assembly program and then a comeback evening show. And the PTA would sell tickets to the evening show. So I would basically do the assembly for free. They would sell tickets to the evening. And in the evening, inevitably, we would saw the principal in half. So when I would announce that in the assembly, that, you know what I've decided to do tonight? We're going to saw your principal in half. It got to where consistently we could predict the attendance in the evening. If the school had a, assuming it wasn't a hard, a hard pressed area, if it was a, relatively middle class area, assuming the school had 300 students, we would know predictably we'd have 300 back in the evening. And that was because of that sawing in half.
Little teaser, you did during the afternoon show.
Yeah. Oh, geez. They would go home and drag their moms and drag their dads back. And then we would get the first, I can't remember what the amount was, but we'd get the first X amount of dollars. And then we would split 50-50 with the PTA after that. And it turned out to be very fine. In fact, some PTAs, even with that, got mad that we took home more money than they thought we should have. But it turned out to be just a fine way. And it allowed me to stay home, sleep in my own bed at night, be with my kids during those important years, and still enjoy my passion of magic.
Did you find that some other people, after you had kind of paved that way, were starting to come in and say, that's working. I think I'm going to start doing that. Did you find some copycat followers there?
Not one.
Oh, that's good.
I didn't, this is the first time anybody's asked me to share my model.
Yeah. So well, Beyond that, one of the brilliant things I thought too was that you had used a neighbor who was a stay-at-home mom, and while her child was at school, that she came over and helped you during a day, and then went out with you. I mean, she sent out the contracts, made the phone calls, set up the appointments, and then went out with you on those appointments.
Yes, exactly. She was really. It made it seem bigger than it was, because I had someone who was he has an employee, he has somebody who's
right.
Who's representing him. I think that was very important, that even though they were calling me in my basement, it didn't sound like they were calling me in my basement.
Sure.
And we really worked hard at that right from the beginning.
And then I think still one of the brilliant things was when you were in the meeting with your employee, and then talk about what you were going to be doing in the program, et cetera, and then it would come down to money, and then you would excuse yourself, say, well, you two can talk about that. And that way, that if he thought it was too much, then she'd say, well, I have to go out and talk with him. So it's kind of like that you had set up, a car salesmanship, and you brought it into someone's office. It was like, I got to go talk to my manager before I can say yes, to this. That was just brilliant.
I know myself too well. I love doing magic. I'll pay you if you'll sit and watch me. So I was too vulnerable in the negotiation process. I needed someone who was, and she was making part of her money from how much she got from them. So it was, it all worked well.
Right. I just think that was a nice negotiating strategy to actually have somebody come along with you when you would set up those meetings, rather than trying to be on the phone and saying, I'm going to get off the phone and let the two of you talk, that you actually then, were physically there.
Oh, I did say yes, and I would just say, no, I'm sorry, I do not. Once we get to the finances, I excuse myself, so thank you, and then I went out. Yeah.
Yeah. And did you find that work most of the time? I mean, a lot of times you still get the full free?
Yeah, very, very consistently. It sure worked for me.
Any other kinds of secrets or suggestions like that?
Oh, I just think understand where the schools are at any given time. We initially tried to come into the schools with a value-based program. We wanted to teach the kids about honesty, and we wanted to teach the kids about all the traits that are generally accepted as admirable. And we were told by the superintendent of schools, I'm sorry, we won't be able to have your program because we are a value-free environment, and we pride ourselves in that.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, value-free? What are we? But that was the rage at the time. And he leaned over and he said, come back in 5 years and we'll be on to something new. And so you kind of have to know what the hot buttons are at that particular time. And right now, I don't think the program would sell with the theme it has, as well as some others. And so you just got to know what's going on.
Well, I haven't worked school shows, but I understand that it's difficult. Oscar Munoz does a lot, and he's told me that when you go back to these schools, that from year to year, that you have to have a little bit different kind of a program. In other words, that last year you were talking about bullying, and this year you're going to talk about the Me Too. I don't know. Whatever it is, there's going to be something that you're going to be talking about. Steve Trash has just a great thing about reuse and recycle, and talking about, keeping our environment clean and things like that. So I think if you have a theme, that's one thing, but I think you also have to have two or three different things that you can kind of go back and kind of let all the schools, the same schools, see the different programs that you got. Like, I'm sure David Ginn must do that. It was some sort of a theme.
We had two shows. We figure every other year with a school was probably enough to see us. And every other year means I'd see a child in first grade, and then I wouldn't see a child again until third grade, and then I wouldn't see that child until fifth grade. Well, now between first and fifth grade, hey, they're ready to see the same show. So two shows usually did us okay. We didn't get complaints from the school, but we were trying to go back every year.
Right. Did you do any library shows also in conjunction with those school shows?
I did not. I couldn't figure out how to do the same level of money. Mm-hmm. So, I was feeding a family of four. So, yeah.
Right.
I couldn't figure that out. I mean, I know there are guys who have, but I couldn't.
See, I've got friends who do library shows, and that's a major part of their income, and they may do two or three libraries in a day and just do a lot of them.
Yeah.
But that does get to be kind of grinding, as opposed to where you're doing one large school that would pay as much as what the three libraries might, for an example. I think that would be just kind of grueling to drive from, well, may not be from town to town, but from library to library if it's in a larger city, but most cities don't have that many. So you're going to a lot of little small towns around the state, to try to tie in the library show and then have a different program for them too.
We were able to find sponsors. We were amazed at how many companies did want their name. If they could go into a school and advertise themselves to the students and to their families.
And the schools were okay with that.
They were thrilled. Well, so their logo would go on the take-home flyers, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then we would explain to them that as a result of their sponsorship, they were getting it for this price instead of for this price, that kind of a thing. And it so happened that when we were doing that, the Fox Network, what were they? They were UHF. Oh my gosh, am I dating myself now? They were UHF when they first came out, I think. And Fox was just getting started, and so they were hungry, and they ran our ads on their startup network a lot for the logo to go on our take-home flyers. So sometimes there's something very creative that can get done with a sponsor as well.
How did you go out about finding a sponsor? I mean, was that part of, Dave, was that part of your strategy to get a sponsor to back you in case the school didn't pay enough?
No, I was wanting media. I thought, boy, nothing like, and they still had, when Fox was just starting up, they still had a live kids show. Like, where have those gone? But anyway, they still had a live kids show. And so I was on with the host of that show from time to time. But basically we had a professional spot shot, and they would run it so many times a day. And as a result, and then in return, their logo would go on our take-home flyer. So I did it for media coverage, primarily.
I see. So it wasn't that you were necessarily going out to find any company or whomever to sponsor you. You were looking specifically for media coverage.
No, but I found companies to underwrite me when I would do like I would do the summer, because then the summer would come and you'd go, okay, there goes my income. Oh my gosh. So we would do the Henry Dorley Zoo, biggest zoo in the nation, I guess now. Man, it's really grown.
That's a good thing.
And we found a sponsor for those shows. So they paid me to go do shows on Saturdays at the Henry Dorley Zoo. And that was a win-win. So we did find them for that. I think we underestimate sometimes and of course it's their marketing dollars, and they're spending them somewhere, and they might as well be spending them to get to you in front of kids and have that good feeling. And it's, that hasn't gone out of style.
Well, you know, while we're on that subject, that reminds me about someone who had told me about, that's what you should do when it comes to charity shows. When you get those phone calls saying, well, this is a charity and we don't have much money or any money, right. And then of course there are a lot of things you can say. Well, are you paying for food? Are you paying for the venue? You know, what about the sodas? I mean, is Coca-Cola providing free sodas? And, you know, and it's like, yeah. Well, no. Well, how come you want me for free? I mean, you know, anyhow, that being aside, without going down that, that's a lose-lose situation, that saying, I'd be glad to do it. Do you think you could find a sponsor then who could pay my fee? This way it would be no cost to you, and they would then say entertainment provided by XYZ Corporation.
Yes, I could see that. I think there's, because I mean, it depends on the organization, but certainly there are organizations that are better connected to corporate than you and I are.
Right. So, but I think that you can pick and choose those charities that you want to donate your time to, which is fine. But I'm saying that one could get bogged down to do nothing but free shows. Free shows beget more free shows. You know, it's like, hey, we had him.
You did it for them.
Sure.
And it's like crazy.
So that's why I think that if you kind of nip that in the bud and say, well, I can do this, and that you're doing it for larger shows. In other words, it's not going to be just for something where we're looking to, you know, save the old elm tree, you know, here, you know, in our neighborhood or something, that it's going to be larger, where it might be for juvenile diabetes or something, where there's a larger organization and more people who are wanting to donate to that. And so there are sponsors who are donating, and they have donation dollars, and just say, well, divert some of those dollars then to the entertainment, or maybe some who, you know, feel like that, well, I want to, you know, sponsor something in some way, because that is a good way then for them to, them being the charity, to have a larger event, because these people are paying for the food. I mean, they're still getting people to come in and buy for the plate that they're eating, and of course the drinks and whatnot, but really that's being offset by somebody else. And same thing with the entertainment, rather than paying for that. So I found that to be successful, and that you then make contacts with other large charitable organizations that will, because you work with that company, and that will also help, you know, to pay for other shows you're going to be doing. And it could be that the company who's sponsoring you is saying, I really like that guy. I want him to come and perform for our company party, for our trade show, for our picnic, or whatever it's going to be, and you might develop a good relationship then with that company as well.
I would agree completely. I think that's a very good approach. It's a and I think also you need to have in your mind a set number of charity shows you do in a year.
Correct.
So if it's three, it's three, and right. We have three for 2018. Now we're and we've already committed them. You're welcome to submit for 2019. I think that just maintains their respect for you. And I think it's that kind of basic boundaries. Yeah.
I mean, that you certainly feel good about yourself, and I think the companies would feel good, because they know, hey, he's a nice guy and that he's helping us out, and he just can't this year, but he will, you know, possibly next year. We'll get with him earlier or something, you know, kind of like that. But I kind of got spun off on a different tangent.
Well, we did, but that's okay.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I remember one thing you and I had developed as well, and really kind of off on a tangent, that we had developed a strategy for building our magic club. Do you remember that?
Well, you're going to have to prime the pump.
Let me kind of prime the pump here a little bit. The reason I'm mentioning this is because I know that listeners out there who belong to magic clubs can benefit from some of the ideas that we had used. And I have suggested this to other clubs, and we've incorporated this in some of the clubs I had belonged to, whether it's an IBM club or an SAM assembly, or whether that it's just a local magic club or whatever. But the idea was that we decided that that a club should be run like a business, basically. And also meaning that you're going to recognize your membership. And we know that we have in every club members that are made up of those who are full-time professionals, some that are part-time professionals, but people who are really interested in magic, those who like to perform. Then there are those who like to watch magic and will attend all the time. And then these guys who are the ones who just have an interest, may never do anything, but they, again, like to kind of get out of the house once a month or whatever. You know, they'll sell the tickets, you know, push the chairs, pull the curtains when you have an annual club meeting or show or something. Right. And so among that, you have people who are advanced in skills, and those who are just beginners who are just joining the club and just coming in for the first time but not knowing who to ask or what to do. And, you know, they might not feel welcome nor even know any magic at all. They're thinking, well, I can just join a magic club and learn something. So we had, by identifying those, that we had the first hour of a two-hour meeting then, let me back up. We had decided that we would send out a schedule for the year, and that we would let everybody know exactly what was happening each month, because typically magic clubs, when you just show up and say, hey, anybody bring something? And so, hey, yeah, Bob brought something and Jimmy brought a card trick. Anybody else want to do something? Okay, well, good night.
Right.
And you don't want to come to the meetings just for meetings and for politics and all that. So you come to a magic meeting to learn some magic. So we had a plan saying, okay, here's what the theme will be. And moreover, I think that the important thing was we didn't have like a coin night and a rope night, because some that would exclude some people who don't do coins or don't do ropes. We said, okay, let's make it into a more generic, like a holiday theme. You know, what is holiday magic? It may be a coin trick. It could be a rope trick, you know, for an example. One might be that we were talking about trade shows. Another one might be about state fairs and county fairs and things like that, or, you know, street performing, whatever, which includes a lot of different things. It could be illusions, it could be small things, whatever it happens to be. So
you're bringing back to me now some of those initial thoughts. I remember concentric circles. I remember the core of your club, and a lot of times the club will drift to where they're taking all their meetings are aimed at the medium. And so what happens is pretty soon the guys who are more advanced or want to go faster or they don't come anymore. Mm-hmm. And you're losing your best. You're losing your brightest. And so I remember spinning off a series of home meetings that were specifically for those who wanted to move faster and go deeper. Yeah. And we kept those guys fed and challenged, even though we couldn't do it in the meeting because then we'd lose the other people, but we kept them fed and challenged. And then they in turn were willing to come to meetings, turn around and give back.
Right.
But I think if you're not feeding them, they drift away.
Well, one of the things that we did in order to feed both of those groups, one was during that first hour of the two-hour meeting, we would have, I remember Joe Stevens used to have the Baker's Dust back when they had videotapes and, you know, whatever. And so they would send, they'd have the newest tape, newest video of someone giving a lecture, and they would send it, I was on the list, so they would send that to me, and we would show that video. So those guys who were advanced and really wanted to learn more could learn some of the secrets, and they would see that video. Now, the next day, if you hadn't attended the meeting, you know, they couldn't contact me to say, hey, I missed the meeting last night. Can I borrow the video? No.
No, we used it to promote Joe Stevens' videos. I remember not even showing the whole thing. We didn't have time to show.
Didn't have time for the whole thing. That's true. That's a good point.
It was enough to whet their appetite, and it was like an ad. I got to get that.
Yes, yes, that's exactly right. But I would send the video then on to a friend of mine in another city who wanted the video, and so I would sell it. We would sell it to him for a little bit of a discount, so he got basically the newest thing as well, and we got some of our money back for the video that we had purchased brand new and, you know, just had been viewed once. Now, the other hour, I was teaching a magic class for beginners, basically, and whether it was ropes and coins, and each month it was a different kind of a theme. And golly, I remember having 30, 40 people in the class who were just coming in, and they at least people coming to a meeting who didn't know anything about magic would learn something about magic. And it wasn't all theory. It was hands-on, you know, that we would, if you didn't have cards, we'd provide cards. If you didn't have coins, we'd provide them or whatever, ropes and different things.
That's right.
Yeah, so we did that. Then the second hour, when we would come together, then we would have a short 15-minute lecture on whatever the theme was that night. So if someone had been working in trade shows, they talk about that. If somebody had been working a state fair, you know, what that was like, you know, in there. And then we would have seems like that we had a another 15 minutes of people who wanted to perform, who were signed up in advance to perform whatever the theme was for that night. And then the next 15 minutes, you know, would be then for if somebody else wanted to do something else. And I think the end of it was where we'd have the end of the night would just talk about the business.
When we were running 30, 40, it wasn't required that everybody come to the front of the room and perform. We were able to break it into smaller groups, and they were able to perform for a smaller pocket. And so you were able to have more people. I think sometimes it just gets like, what are you going to do when I think that's what keeps our clubs, one of the factors that keeps our clubs from growing is because we don't have good management. Once we get above a certain size, yeah, I want to perform. Yeah, I want to. Well, what are you going to have 10 people perform in the front of the room? This is a death march. And so, We would break into smaller groups, and you'd perform for a smaller group.
I forgot about that, and that's a very good point that you mentioned, Dave, because that and people might be thinking, well, our group is not going to be large enough where we're going to split up when we only have 6 or 12 people who show up in the meetings. That's the beauty of this program. We were having up to 80 to 100 people at our meetings. And Omaha is how big? What are we, about 500,000 people?
Yeah, 600 if you want to stretch all the suburbs, but yes.
And so my point is that people who live in smaller cities can replicate the same thing, and it is a beautiful thing, and you get a lot of people involved and more people interested. And, yeah, we were just – that's why we did have to break up into smaller groups, because there were so many people, and they were getting excited about performing and attending the meetings.
But I remember breaking into smaller groups before we had to break into smaller groups. And I think that's probably getting them used to the fact that, no, you're not going to perform in front of the whole room, but you are going to perform in front of a pocket of people around your table or around your, you know.
That's right.
And I think that was key to making it so we could continue to grow, and people wouldn't feel like, oh, if I bring somebody or if I recruit somebody, then it's not going to become it's not as intimate as it was and blah, 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 blah.
Right. Right. But that's one of those things that then still needs to be an ongoing thing. I think if you have a good, solid management team, and again, looking at the club as a business and running it with a management team, and it also seems like that I recall that some of the business meetings that we had were outside of that meeting. So the officers weren't necessarily conducting all the business that needed to be. Some things need to be voted on and brought before the club, of course, but other things that we would do outside that, like at your house.
It was a representative form of government, not a democratic form of government. We didn't vote on everything at the club. You elected your leaders to lead.
Right.
And so we made a lot of decisions. Once the leaders were in place, the leaders made a lot of decisions.
And that's something in which the rest of the group felt comfortable with who they had elected to be in that position, and knowing that the reason that you're actually coming to a magic meeting is to see magic, not to vote on a new article to the Constitution, you know.
That's right. That's right. Exactly.
We don't need more bylaws. We just need more double lifts, you know.
Well, we really do need more double lifts. Yes, we do.
But, that's just – as an aside, I just thought it would be interesting. I wanted to – I've never really discussed that in these hundreds of podcasts, but I just think that there are clubs out there who are looking to try to grow, and as they're doing that as we're reaching close to the end of the year here, that they might start to put some of these things into – play for the following year here in 2019. But again, most importantly would be to have a 12-year plan. And we put that – I remember we even had a pocket calendar that we gave out to everybody that you can put in your wallet that said what was happening.
We did. Mm-hmm. Yep, we did.
So and we had donuts. I remember that people brought, you know, food, stuff then too.
We made it the event. Yeah, absolutely.
And so it was great. Okay, well,
we were a good team.
We were. That's why I was saying, you know, I really miss being around you. I'm glad we had a chance to chat about this. Well, you know, when you had contacted me then recently, you had said that you got this new thing. We talked about library.com, and by the way, library, that's with two Y's. It's LYBRARY.
Yeah, two Y's, but they're not together. Right, okay.
Right. True. And the point is that I think this is fascinating, and here we are now in October, and I have last week published a podcast that was with Paul Voudini talking about seances, and in this case that he was really not and is not a magician, but really does the real deal seance, and so it's kind of interesting to talk with him. And the reason I'm wanting to have you here on this week is to talk about cold reading, because even though you're not a psychic and haven't done any of that kind of a thing, but I just think that the application of cold reading in the corporate market is fascinating.
Oh, it's so fascinating.
So, well, tell me about it.
You want to go there?
Let's get going. Yeah.
What I do now is I do almost Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, I do back-to-back executive coaching. So people come to me working on their management skills, working on issues they're having with people and all that kind of stuff, and I'm in my 14th year of doing that. Well, cold reading has been so instrumental in my life, even though I've never glanced in a crystal ball or had a sitter.
Yeah, but by being a marriage counselor and a pastor, that those things kind of come natural to you.
I just love reading things about cold reading because it tells me what's going on inside of the person across from me, regardless of the social mask they might be wearing at the time.
Exactly.
And that is huge. It takes away an intimidation factor. And I think it has some real powerful influences. First of all, it had powerful influences on me. Then I find I carried myself differently in the room. And I never went, I sense that you have a scar on you. No, I didn't. I didn't ever go there.
Right.
But it was like, because of the way I presented myself to them, they felt like I knew them without them having to reveal everything. And I think that sense, whether it be a personality type or whether it be every one of us struggling with consistent self-worth, whether it be, I just assume that's true of you. Of course it's true of you. And I think that caused them to then open up to me even more in my coaching, in my executive coaching sessions. And so what I wanted to do was take cold reading and really take it out of the seer room and bring it to where, how do I say it? I wanted it to be I believe it can be very substantive. So when I talk to somebody and they happen to be struggling with drama with one of their direct reports, I'll talk about solutions that I've come up with and a diagram that I might draw about drama and how it impacts relationships and how we stay out of that drama. And they'll go, do you know my wife? Do you know my relationship with my kids? But this is the same thing I would hear when I was a pastor. I would be at the back door shaking hands, and they would go, oh, pastor, today it was just like you were speaking to me. Mm-hmm. Well, I was speaking to everybody because, like, we all aren't that unique.
That's why there are stereotypes, because many of them are true.
we work hard at not being just a number, but we have more things in common than we have different. And I think that's why cold reading catches some people off guard, because they go, you know me? No, I just know people. And I think that's how I'd like to, I'd like to show the power and the,
right.
The use of cold reading principles in a corporate environment.
Well, let me give you an example. I had spoken with a client. It's been some years ago. And we got off on a tangent, I think, in talking about magic. And she was an HR person in charge of hiring and firing employees and interviewing them and all of that. And as we were talking, I was talking about cold reading. And I didn't say cold reading. I was talking about, she said, well, what can you tell me about me? And so I started talking with her. And because after the conversation, we'd just been speaking for 15, 20 minutes. I knew enough about her and some things that she had revealed either factually or in between the lines that I kind of could read into her about her life and her belief system and whether that she was single and the children and, you know, just kind of looking around the room and picking up some different things and basically just stopped her cold, that her eyes just got larger and larger. And, you know, when you get a hit, obviously. And that was kind of the same way. And she said, well, how do you know those things about me? I didn't tell you. I mean, and this was before social media, so it wasn't like I could have looked up something. You know, it's just I did it on the spot. And I was saying, well, it's just something that you have to, you know, be very conscientious and conscious of your surroundings and what's happening and to understand, you know, general principles and psychology. And I've got a lot of books on that. And it's something that they do with the FBI and profiling and all that kind of a thing. There are several books that are out there. But she said, this is something that if I had that skill, I could use to have better hires for my employees. Absolutely. I could then read somebody to decide, you know, this person is going to work out or not going to work out. And because of not just a gut reaction, but because of some other signs and things that their body actions and everything else is telling them that this is a good or a bad decision. She said, I really could use that skill. And I always thought, boy, there is a market there. And then whenever I heard that you've got these books available that's going to be talking about cold reading in the corporate market, it's like, bingo, that's exactly, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And it causes them to then relax with you. Oh, he already knows me. And he's not judging me.
Right.
You gave her that information without a hint of judgment.
Right.
And that caused her to say, wow, I could share more with this person. Because what they know they haven't judged, I'm confident I could tell them more now. And I think that whole ability, it's a rapport building tool, I believe.
Mm-hmm. So the different books that you got, these PDF ebooks, does one build on the other one? Can you jump into the third book, or do you need to read the first and second first?
There's a free intro. Because I think as soon as you say, I call them scientific cold reading. I think there was probably a better name. But anyway, who needs, I mean, if you've read Webster and if you've read Boudini and if you've read, you need more on cold reading? I don't think so. And so I did a free intro that just says, no, this is the context that I'm talking about. So if this is intriguing to you, get the rest of them. So my encouragement is go to library, listen to the, it might not be for your listeners, but if they listen to the intro, they'll know. And then I go into different topics. So when someone comes to me and they're struggling with drama, relationship drama, what do I share with them? Mm-hmm. Well, I think visually. So I have a picture I draw of how to stay out of relational drama. And once I've drawn that picture and they see it, they go, that is it right there. That's it right there. And then they open up. So I almost invert cold reading rather than saying, I sense that you have this and that and this and that.
You make it more conversational, as opposed to what a psychic would be.
Once I've shown the for instance, the drama is the number two one. Personality types is number one. The drama is in relationships is number two. But once I've shown them the picture, then I say, well, boy, you sure reacted strongly to that picture. What was it about that resonated with you? Boom.
Yeah.
Well,
a lot of times that's some of the best cold reading, that you can show something and they give you feedback and then you're essentially repeating back to them what they just said, but using different words.
They're connecting the dots.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think that's some of the best cold reading, again, where they don't realize that you're just regurgitating what they've just told you.
Exactly. Or they're just telling you what they thought they were coming to have you tell them.
Right. But I think that you got a good point. By being open to begin with, then they're more likely to offer something to you, as opposed to going to a psychic that some people are skeptical, some are not. Some are believers, and they'll just go right in and tell you stuff. And,
right, right.
But there's some that'll come in with their arms crossed and just not give you any head nod one way or the other, because it's kind of like, being challenged as a magician. Okay, magic boy, fool me, you know.
Right, exactly. So I picked from my coaching the topics that caused the widest eyes from the person on the other side. In these 14 years, there have been a set of topics. Their personality traits always causes some wide eyes. Relational drama, maintaining a sense of personal worthiness. Some days I just don't feel worth much. How do I maintain that consistently? How do I find happiness in an unhappy situation? These are the ones that when I drew the pictures for my clients, I got the widest eyes. Those are the five that I've put into these PDF documents.
But you don't see yourself obviously as a psychotherapist from the standpoint that there might be someone who you realize has a deeper depression or something else is going on.
Please. No. What I give them are sound psychological principles for managing what they might be facing. Now, are they able to do that? Well, not if they have chemical issues that are causing depression and, you know, no, that would be, and then it would be, boy, you need to see your GP and
right.
have you had a good physical lately?
And have you recognized that? I mean, have you seen that sometimes in some people?
Absolutely. Okay. Please. And then you will say, you know, because you don't know whether it's emotional, psychological, physical. And I think I'm really not in the corporate world to be someone's psychotherapist. I'm here to give them sound suggestions for how to manage the dynamics that are going on in their department, but now, not to shrink them down.
I have to know
where my boundaries are.
Do you also teach those tools, or you just use those tools for helping to improve the performance in the departments?
Do I teach the tools?
What I mean, do you teach those tools? Do you give those tools? For example, what I just was talking about, this HR lady, that if she had the tools that I have or that you would have here in these books, that would be something that she could then employ and help in her job. So my question is, do you teach these things when you are working with your corporate coaching, saying, look, here's what I'm doing and you can do it too. Here are the tools.
The principles are in the company where I've worked now for 14 years, 23 little PDFs have gone out with the principles that I teach in the coaching room. And yes, so I distribute them as widely as I can.
So they know what you're doing whenever that you're talking with them.
Yes.
And do you use some of the same things I mentioned earlier about profiling, where that you're going to be where you're using mirroring, for an example.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, all those bonding and rapport skills and being very aware of their nonverbals and all those things and listening and repeating and phrasing and summarizing what they've said and all those things come in. But I don't want to just be doing it. I want to be modeling for them and then helping them learn how to do it so that they can carry it back and be more effective with their people.
Gotcha. You know, I think that some of those tools could also be used by magicians, not just in close-up, but then on stage in working with volunteers and putting them more at ease as well.
Don't you think? we've all seen bad examples of that, yes.
So, again, that's something that could be applicable to magicians and not just to someone who is thinking about being an executive coach.
Well, you know what I'm really hoping is, as people get these documents, it first helps their own life. So like they read them and go, oh my gosh, that would cut down on my relational drama, or that would help me feel better about myself more consistently every day.
Right.
That would be a great start. And then the fact that they could turn around and share it with somebody else would even make me happier.
How long did it take you to develop all these books?
Oh, that's in my early 20s, I started accumulating the information that are now in these books, and you just keep adding as you get to know people. And I just celebrated in July my 66th birthday. So yeah, right. It's been a while.
Yeah. You're still a young man. I'm just a year older than you.
Oh, I still feel young.
Yes, don't we all? Well, you're right. I think that those are things that that are ongoing, and more importantly, transcend time, because the things that you may have put down in your 20s are just as important and valid and useful today as they were back then, because they are not subject to fashion. You know, that's
right.
You know, fashion goes out of in and out, but style stays in, you know, and this is something.
Well, I like that distinction. Sure. Mm-hmm. And I have greater conviction around them than I did in my 20s, and greater confidence because I've tested them and seen it. And yeah,
right.
I agree.
Yeah. Now, when you are doing this these executive coaching, because I'm just thinking of that being applicable to others who might be looking at doing the same kind of thing or getting into that kind of business, do you coach for one-on-one or in small groups or larger groups?
It's all one-on-one for me. Mm-hmm. And we have at the beginning of the year, we're now starting to look at 2019, and we're starting to say, you know, what goals? I'm taking them through a goal setting process, and then we will be monitoring that monthly, and they meet with me for an hour every month. So 12 times in 2019, the people that I have as clients meet with me, and we continue to monitor the progress of their goals. And a lot of them have to do with self-development. I work for a very flat organization, meaning there's not a lot of opportunity for, you know, promotion and upward climbing, and
right.
and that just becomes even more important then, that these people feel like, but okay, I'm not being promoted, but I am advancing, I'm growing professionally, I'm continuing to gain new skills, I'm continuing to become more marketable, and so that's where this comes in, and it really helps with the retention of employees.
Well, you kind of answered the question, too, because I was just thinking when you said a flat organization, I was going to ask whether that these employees were recommended to you by the company, because sometimes they may say, well, we've got an employee who is on a track for management and we want you to work with him. Or it might be someone's like, you know, he's okay or she's okay, but there are some issues that need to be resolved and they need to go to some sort of school to learn to, you know, to work out these issues and find out what's...
Well, yeah, and some of them are situational, like you just mentioned. And then once they achieve a certain level in the company, they become my client.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how the others come to me. Once they're a manager or senior manager or something like that, then they become client of mine.
Right. Now, for those who are in other states and might want to try to replicate this, how did you initially go about that? Is that something you could share as well, as far as going into a company or through an agent or a group or something in order to say,
well,
look, here's what I can do for you?
I owned for 10 years the Sandler sales franchise for Nebraska. And so this particular company had used Sandler, the Sandler selling system, before. And so when I became the franchisee, they said, hey, will you come in? Would you train our people? And we like that system. Okay,
yeah.
So I came in and did that. And then that branched off into, yeah, okay, now you've trained our salespeople. Well, what about the people that manage our salespeople? And now what about the people that manage the people who manage our salespeople? You know,
right.
So I think once your foot gets in the door, and of course, that's always the key, is getting your foot in the door. But once your foot gets in the door, you create a little beachhead, and then you keep expanding it. And that's basically what's happened to me.
Okay. Yeah, because again, I was just thinking about some people who might be in some sort of a statistical large metropolitan area that they could go in, or even a smaller place at least, to go and talk, whether it's a real estate company, which I think would be very important, you know, for realtors.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, the buzzword right now is leadership and leadership development. And I think companies understand that they need leadership development. I think they're also understanding that there's a new wave of people coming in. That would be the millennials and the generation, whatever we're going to call them after the millennials. And there's even more openness among that generation to being mentored. And so the word mentoring and having, do you have a mentoring program?
Right.
Could I help you establish a mentoring program? All those things are buzzwords right now. Just like we talked about with the schools, companies have buzzwords, and right now it's leadership and mentoring and all those things.
Wow. Yeah. Well, we've had a ton of stuff we talked about over here.
Well, we sure did.
So tell me, again, we talked about library.com. I guess that's where they go. But what are the titles for the books and how would they go about getting those?
Oh, yeah. Go to I have an author page there. So just type in Dave Arch and you'll get to something that's on there. And then click on my name and you'll get to an author page. And everything that I've released is there. And including the cold reading documents.
Okay. And as I recall, when I looked at it as well, there are some videos too.
I have the train the trainer videos that we talked about. I have routines that I've brought forward from my school show days. There's a real hodgepodge. When you're supporting your family with it, you know, somebody says, can you do that? You bet. And so
the answer is always yes. Yeah.
You've done a little bit of everything.
Right. Well, I appreciate it. Well, and the last thing is, since my podcast is called The Magic Word, what's your philosophy of life? What's your magic word or phrase?
My magic word or phrase?
Yeah, in other words, what is important to you when you wake up in the morning? What is it that it really gets you going and keeps you going all day long, and something that's advice you live by?
Oh, I want to better someone else's life every day.
Wow.
I want to be known as someone who gives, not takes. And I want to figure out how to give that day.
Wow. I don't think I've had anybody say that. No.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. These times.
Yeah. Well, I've known takers, and I just don't ever want to be known as a taker. I want to be known as a giver.
Be a giver. That's fantastic. Yeah. Well, you certainly have been. You've given us a lot of food for thought over this past hour then as well. And, boy, this went quickly. Thank you. Thank you, Dave.
Oh, you're welcome. Good to connect with you.
Okay. Always good chatting with you.
You bet.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was my friend Dave Arch, and this is Scotty out. Well, that was a pretty full episode, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Gosh, we talked about a little bit of everything, starting off then with school shows, getting into club attendance, trying to increase that at your local club level, as well as, of course, the corporate cold reading. I think that's very interesting. And Dave really is a font of knowledge of a lot of different things and has been successful in most everything that he has put his hand to. So, again, I want to thank Dave Arch for being my guest here again this week, and thank you for tuning in and listening. I hope, again, that you enjoyed it, and if so, then please leave us a 5-star review in the Apple's iTunes store. And also, we appreciate your support of our sponsor, that is theperfecttrick.com. Please go over and check them out, and if you're going to be purchasing anything online, you ought to at least check them out, because you get some good free stuff. And of course, you get an additional 10% discount on everything that you purchase by putting in the promo code WORD at the end whenever that you're going to be checking out. And one last thing that I want to remind you to please subscribe to our weekly newsletter to kind of let you know what's going to be coming up from week to week, and also who's going to be talking this week. Be sure to subscribe then to the Magic Word Podcast through your favorite podcast service, whatever that might be, if it's on Stitcher or Tuned In on iHeartRadio, Spotify, whatever. There are so many different ways that you can subscribe to this newsletter, rather to this podcast, and I appreciate you doing that. As far as subscribing to the newsletter, you can go do that through themagicwordpodcast.com, and where it says subscribe to The Magic Word, you'll see at the bottom there's a place to fill in your information for a newsletter to come to you each week. And as I said, we'll be letting you know what's happening from week to week, and just as a preview for next week, since we are now just finishing here the second week for the Halloween-type podcast, we're going to conclude next week for the three of our three-part series of Halloween-type podcasts or related things with famed mentalist Mr. Doc Hilford. So be sure and come back then. So until then, stay well, get booked, and remember to make someone else's life better every day. Be a giver and not a taker. This is Scotty out.